This is a Triple J podcast.
Hey, it's Dave Marchese. This is the Hack Podcast. And just a bit of a trigger warning, we're spending this entire ep of the Hack Podcast talking about obesity, weight loss drugs. We're also talking a little bit about eating disorders as well. If you might find that triggering, maybe this is not the one for you. Skip this episode. But more than 65% of Australian adults are overweight or obese. And we're not alone. The US, the UK, so many countries around the world are grappling with this issue. Global obesity. Globesity, they call it. So imagine if there was a miracle weight loss drug. You start taking it and the kilos seem to melt away. Well, a drug does exist. There are actually a few. What is the deal with Ozempic? We're going to be diving deep into Ozempic in this episode of the Hack Podcast because the corporation who makes it in just a few years has become one of the most valuable companies in the world. It's worth more than Tesla. Some are comparing these drugs to the invention of the smartphone. So what kind of impact will they have on the world? Well, we're going to speak with international best-selling author Johan Hari, who's been spending years investigating. He's written a whole book on it. It's fascinating. That's coming up. First, though.
Hack. You've probably heard a lot about the drug Ozempic.
Ozempic. Ozempic.
I'm going to do the Ozempic weight loss shot.
On Triple J.
Yeah, it's no secret that even though Ozempic is a prescription drug in Australia and for people with diabetes, they're not the only ones using it. In fact, an entirely different group of people who are a very long way from obese are taking Ozempic. And it might surprise you. Hack reporter Angus McIntosh has been looking into it.
I was having trouble controlling my intake, and I was eating so much food that it was making me physically ill. I had to sleep sitting up because otherwise food would flow from my throat into my windpipe.
What Mike Israetel is describing here is a hunger few people will ever experience. Fresh off a contest in the US, the American Masters bodybuilder was sitting at around 5% body fat, which is about as low as an adult man can go, and it felt like his body thought it was dying. That's when he started taking semaglutide, also known as Ozempic, and he says all that hunger went away.
I didn't take it for long. All I needed it for a couple of weeks post-contest, and then for my next series of contest preparations months later, I began to take it again, and then saw the incredible ultra-helpful effects that it has.
On top of being a bodybuilder and successful YouTuber, Mike Israetel is also a former professor of sports physiology, so it's fair to say he wasn't going in blind when he chose to take the weight loss wonder drug, despite being neither diabetic nor obese. And the idea of people taking semaglutide for reasons besides medical necessity is nothing new in Australia either. Just ask Melbourne personal trainer and fellow bodybuilder Aaron Curtis.
None of the people that I was training that were on semaglutide are obese.
Right now, semaglutide is only approved for the treatment of diabetes in Australia, but doctors can use their discretion to prescribe it for patients wanting to lose weight. Aaron says his clients are managing to get their hands on it legally.
They haven't had to source it black market. They've had it prescribed from their doctor for weight loss purposes.
Aaron competes as a natural bodybuilder. Natural, meaning no steroids or other drugs. But he reckons in the so-called enhanced competitions that follow a more don't ask, don't tell kind of approach to drug use, it's about to explode.
I'd say the vast majority of people would use some sort of pharmaceutical that aids in fat loss.
Mike says the advantage of reducing hunger is so big that bodybuilding organizers will have to respond.
It explicitly, no doubt, is going on many drug-free lists very soon. For the untested federations, for example, the ones in which I compete, it's never going to go on the list because it's nothing new as far as it's just another drug, and so nobody cares.
Juiced up bodybuilders are a pretty extreme example of how appetite suppressants are used by people who don't strictly need them. But you don't have to step into a gym to see it happen. Pharmacy lecturer Andrew Bartlett works at Sydney Uni, and he's one of the pharmacists trying to put the brakes on people getting these drugs without a medical need for them.
The demand has just been, you know, astronomical. So the other ways that sort of people are accessing it, apart from being on waiting lists, and is having them compounded by compounding pharmacies. Now, there is allowances in Australia for compounding to be done for an individual patient on one-off basis on a prescription. And I guess we've also heard other stories of it being produced and distributed illegally without prescription.
Andrew also reckons it's too early to know all the side effects.
The research is still ongoing. At the moment, Ozempic has a black box warning in the US because of some studies in animals, tumours. Anyone that loses weight quickly, it can possibly have effects such as hair loss and things like problems with your pancreas or your gallbladder.
But predictably, the diet and exercise argument isn't exactly convincing for a pro bodybuilder. And the effects of semaglutide on people that muscly and so lean are even less understood. But Mike doesn't care. Mike wants to open up these drugs to everyone, not just people with a prescription.
And there's not a damn thing we're going to be able to do about it other than just trying to get people educated and aware.
Hack on Triple J.
Angus McIntosh there. Well, let's get into this. Find out more about Ozempic and these weight loss drugs, because it's fascinating. And while some are claiming they are going to change the world as we know it, others are warning of the risks, saying there's still so much we don't know. One person who's been on a mission to find out more is best-selling author Johan Hari. Now, you might remember we spoke to Johan a couple of years ago about why we all struggled to pay attention in the 21st century. But now he's turned his sights to this because he's one of the people who's been taking Ozempic to lose weight himself. He's got a new book out. It's called Magic Pill, The Extraordinary Benefits and Disturbing Risks of the New Weight Loss Drugs. And Johan's a big deal. He's famous all over the world. Oprah loves him. And we love him. He's with us now. Johan Hari, welcome back to Hack.
Hooray. I'm so happy to be with you. Thanks so much. Every now and then, Oprah texts me and my friend, and I'm always like, shut up, everyone! The surrealism of that.
It's kind of weird. It must be nice to be introduced as, you know, someone who Oprah loves. I mean, that's what we all aspire to. Johan, how much of an impact do you think weight loss drugs like Ozempic are going to have on the world?
It's going to be absolutely massive. I mean, a good way of predicting how likely this is look at what the financial markets are predicting. Krispy Kreme stock is massively down, the donut company. Nestle, head of Nestle, has been making very nervous noises about the future of their ice cream and confectionery sections.
As a result of these drugs?
Yeah, exactly. In the US, big report by Jefferies Financial for the American Airlines just said, prepare for the fact that you're going to save loads of money on fuel, because the population's going to be much thinner. And as a result, it's going to cost less money to fly them around everywhere, right? I think there's huge changes. And, you know, my book is called Magic Pill because there's three ways in which this transformation that has already begun could be magic. The first is the most obvious. It could just solve the problem. The second way in which it could be magic is obviously more disturbing. It could be a magic trick, right? You know, the conjurer who shows you a card trick while he's picking your pocket. It could be we're getting these benefits, but actually we're going to get much bigger risks and we're going to pay a really big price down the line. I'm very concerned that's a real possibility. The third way is actually one I think is the most likely. If you think about the classic stories of magic, right, that we all grew up with, Aladdin, Fantasia, you find the lamp, you get the genie, you get the magic, you make your wish, and it comes true, but not quite in the way you expected. This is a new drug working in a completely new way that has extraordinary effects. The average person who takes it loses 15% of their body weight within a year. For the next class of these drugs, the next iteration of these drugs, Mounjaro, the average person loses 21% of their body weight. And for the next version that's going to come out probably next year, Triple G, the average person loses 24% of their body weight. This could have massive health implications, right? I'm older now than my granddad ever got to be because he died when he was 44. So I thought, whoa, if there really is a drug that can reduce or even reverse obesity, that's going to have massive implications for human health. But I also immediately thought, wait a minute. I've seen this story before. Pretty much every 20 years, going right back to the First World War, a new diet drug is announced. We're told it's a miracle diet drug. We're told it's going to save us all. Loads of people take it, and they always discover some horrendous, you know, effect that it has on your health, and it always gets yanked from the market, leaving a kind of wave of devastated people behind it.
So where did these drugs come from? What's the history?
So the core mechanism was discovered in 1984 by a guy called Dr. Daniel Drucker, who I've interviewed. The core mechanism is pretty simple. If you ate something now, it doesn't matter what it was, and you eat for a little while, your pancreas will produce a hormone called GLP-1 in your gut. And we now know this is basically the kind of natural signal in your body saying, stop eating now, you've had enough, right? It's like the brakes. But that natural hormone, GLP-1, which Dr. Drucker discovered, only stays in your system for a couple of minutes and then it's washed away. So, you know, you can kind of power through it and just carry on eating if you want to, and as I have done for most of my 45 years on Earth. But what these drugs do is they inject into you an artificial copy of GLP-1. But instead of only lasting for a couple of minutes, they stay in your system for a whole week. 2 days after I first injected myself with it, it's a tiny little, it's an EpiPen, doesn't really feel like an injection. And I woke up and I thought, I feel something really strange. What is it that I'm feeling? And I couldn't locate what it was. I felt a bit nauseous, but I knew I'd feel that. I'd felt that the day before. It wasn't that. And it took me a good 5 minutes to realize I had woken up and I wasn't hungry. I don't remember that ever happening to me before. And I was like, this is weird. These drugs, in addition to hugely reducing your appetite, also stimulate the creation of insulin, which is obviously what diabetics are lacking. So it was initially licensed starting 18 years ago as a drug for diabetes. So Ozempic, which is the same thing as the drug Wegovy, it's just marketed under a different name, is marketed for people with diabetes. So we've had 18 years of diabetics taking these drugs, and now we've had unlicensed couple of years of people taking it to treat obesity in the United States.
Do you still take the drug now?
Yeah. And the thing that decided it for me, pretty simple. So up to now, it's been very hard for people who were obese, as I was, to lose a lot of weight and keep it off. It's possible. We all know someone who's done it, but it's pretty hard. The most reliable method up to now has been bariatric surgery. So those are obviously people who are severely obese, who have stomach stapling or the other forms of bariatric surgery. Horrible operation. 1 in 1,000 people die in the operation. It's no joke. But the reason why people risk that, some of them, is because of what happens to your health next when you reverse your obesity. If you have bariatric surgery, your chances of dying of heart disease go down by 56%. Your chance of dying of diabetes-related causes goes down by 92%. Your chance of dying of any cause at all goes down by 40% over that period. And we now know that in addition to some pretty serious concerns and risks, these drugs move you in a similar direction. So the thing that was decisive for me was if you take these drugs and you started with a BMI higher than 27, your chances of having a heart attack or stroke go down really massively by 20%. That's what I've been worried about all my life. The fact that it reversed my obesity, I lost 3 stone. I know you barbaric Australians thinking kilos, so someone will have to do that translation for me. I can't do it. So for me, that even though I have lots of worries about the 12 big risks that I write about in Magic Pill, for me, that was the thing that made me think, given my risk profile, I'll choose the risk of the drugs over the risk of the ongoing obesity.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with best-selling author Johan Hari about his new book, Magic Pill, on Ozempic and the new weight loss drugs. We're hearing from you. Kylie in Ngunnawal Country says, as a person who's dieted most of my adult life and has been morbidly obese, I can't emphasize how these medications have changed my life. Johan, in the book you write, Ozempic and the drugs that follow represent a moment of madness. We built a food system that poisons us, and then to keep us away from the avalanche of bad food, we decided to inject ourselves with a different potential poison, one that puts us off all food. When you think about it like that, it's pretty wild.
Between the year I was born and the year I turned 21, obesity doubled in the US, and then over the next 20 years, severe obesity doubled again. And to get a sense of how massive a change this has never happened in the whole of human history. Obesity, all of human history, was very rare, and it's now in the US almost the norm. And we know what causes this transformation. It's not a failure of willpower, it's not weakness, it's not greed. That change happens in every single country that makes one change and one change only, from people predominantly eating fresh whole foods to people predominantly eating foods that are constructed out of chemicals in factories in a process that isn't even called cooking, it's called manufacturing food. And there was an experiment that really helped me to understand what that food has done to us. Scientist, brilliant scientist called Professor Paul Kenny. So he designed an experiment, got a load of rats and he raised them in a cage. And all they had to eat was loads and loads of the kind of food that rats evolved to eat, healthy whole foods in a pellet form. And so the rats ate it. But what was interesting is the rats only ate the food when they were hungry. They would eat when they were hungry and then they would just stop. They had some kind of natural nutritional wisdom that said, all right, mate, you've had enough, stop now. Then Professor Kenny introduced them to the American diet. He fried up some bacon, he bought some Snickers bars, he bought a load of cheesecake and he put it down and they still had all the healthy food they'd ever had. And they went crazy for the American food. When he put the cheesecake down, they would literally hurl themselves into it, And that nutritional wisdom that they had had, you know, with the previous food, just disappeared. They ate and ate and ate. And the way Professor Kenny put it to me is within a couple of days, they were different animals. And very rapidly, they all became overweight or obese. Then Professor Kenny did something that to me, as a former KFC addict, seems pretty cruel. He took away the American diet and left them with nothing but the healthy food again. And he was pretty sure he knew what would happen. Now they would eat more of the healthy food than they had before. And this would prove that junk food expanded the number of calories that you eat. That's not what happened. What happened was much weirder. Once they'd had the American food and it was taken away, they refused to eat any of the healthy food at all.
Wow.
It was like they didn't even recognize it as food anymore. It was only when they were really hungry, when they were starving, that they finally went back to eat it. Now, this fits with a much wider body of evidence about humans. There's something about the food we're eating, this completely different kind of factory-assembled food, that is undermining our ability to know when to stop. And there's a word that describes this. It's not a word we use that often in everyday English, but it's called being sated, satiety, right? We all know that feeling, get it from food, like Christmas Day, you've had too much, you're sated, you don't want any more. We get it from sex sometimes. We all know that feeling of being sated. This food has stolen our satiety. And what these drugs do is they give you back your sense of satiety. Just seems like madness, right?
Johan, in this book, you travel the world. And while we say, oh, drugs like Ozempic could save humanity, there are countries where they don't need these weight loss drugs. You went to Japan, for example. What did you learn there?
This blew my mind. In the US, 42% of people are obese. In Japan, it's 4%. They've got extremely low levels of obesity. So sometimes people say about these new weight loss drugs, well, look, this is just the result of being rich, right? If your country gets to be rich, you'll eat too much. And it's just inevitable that we're all going to have to be on these drugs, right? You know, Japan is the third richest country in the world, and there's almost no obesity there. There's no market for Ozempic because there's almost no obese people, right? And I wanted to understand how they did it. And they did loads of things, but one of them is really simple. I went to a school called Koenji School in Tokyo. 1,000 kids, none of the children were overweight. Every school in Japan, by law, has to employ a professional nutritionist. Her job is to design the school meals. You're not allowed to bring a packed lunch. You've got to eat the food the school makes. It is illegal for it to contain any processed food. It has to all be made fresh on the day. It has to contain all the food groups. And you use the food to educate the children about how to make themselves healthy and how to love healthy food. To give you a sense of how good they are at it and how weird it seems to us, go around the school with my brilliant translator, Chie. I was speaking to these kids. I went to a class of, like, they were 9 and 10. And I said to these kids, what's your favorite food? Right, they're having lunch. And first kid said, broccoli. I love broccoli. I'm like, all right, I stumbled on a freak, okay. The next one goes, like, white fish. And I turned to Chie and I said, look, are these kids trolling me here? Right? Like, but really, their favorite foods are broccoli and white rice. And Chie just looked puzzled. And she said to me, well, yeah, we teach our kids to like healthy food. I really got a sense in Japan what you can get if you get this right. Because I went to one of the places I went to was this place that almost sounds mythical. It's called Ogimi. It's the oldest village in the world. There's 215 homes and 192 of them have someone older than 90 living in them. This is what you get if you get the obesity crisis right. Okay, not everyone's going to live to be 102, but you get more years of happiness, more years of joy, more years of dancing, right? It's why it's so important that we think through both the science of these drugs that I talk about in my book, Magic Pill, but also we see them in the wider context of this obesity crisis. Of course, I thought about the grandfather I never got to know, about so many of my friends who've died of obesity-related causes. It doesn't have to happen.
You're on Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with best-selling author Johan Hari. We're talking about his new book on Ozempic called Magic Pill. We're hearing from you. Tony in Brisbane says, I work in a pharmacy and the amount of people taking this drug to lose weight when they don't need it is crazy and it's scary as well. Johan, let's talk about some of the risks because that's another factor in all of this. What did you find when you started exploring it, when you started to research the negative impacts?
There's a lot of concerns I have. I'll give you an example just of one. A lot of the scientists in the field say quite reasonably, actually, we've got a lot of evidence on this. The diabetics have been taking them for 18 years. If it caused some disastrous effect, you know, if it made you grow horns, the diabetics would have horns by now, right? And that is an important point, and there's a lot of validity in that, and it should give people some sense of security. But some other scientists, equally credible and brilliant scientists, said, well, okay, let's really dig into what happened with the diabetics. So, for example, there's a brilliant scientist called Professor Jean-Luc Failly, who I interviewed, who's at the University Hospital in Montpellier in France. And one thing really caught his eye. when these drugs are given to rats, they massively increase their chance of getting thyroid cancer. So he's like, oh, a bit of a problem. And you get this sort of plausible sense to it in that GLP-1, the thing we were talking about, you have receptors for GLP-1 in your thyroid. So it makes sense if you're playing with GLP-1, it might have an effect on your thyroid. And what he discovered is these drugs increase your thyroid cancer by between 50 to 75%. Now, it's important to understand what that doesn't mean, because at first you're like, what? That doesn't mean if you take these drugs, you are 50 to 75% likely to get thyroid cancer. If that was the case, we'd be burning them in bonfires all over the world. What it means is whatever your thyroid cancer risk was at the start, if he's right and some scientists disagree, then that risk goes up by between 50 to 75%. So it's a relatively small risk, about 1.2% of people get thyroid cancer in their life. But it's a pretty big increase in that small risk. The overall risk remains small, but it's pretty sobering. And that's one of 12 kind of flashing lights. But even against that, and some scientists said to me, okay, let's imagine he's right. Even then, you have to realistically weigh it against, well, what are the risks, the cancer risks from just remaining obese?
What did the manufacturers tell you when you put the risks to them? Because you asked a series of questions about the side effects of these drugs. What did they have to say?
There's two main companies that make these drugs, so Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly. Eli Lilly refused to comment on any of the risks related to the drugs. I was really surprised by that, but for legal reasons, I've been advised to not comment any further on what that might mean. And Novo Nordisk did engage quite seriously and sent very detailed and thoughtful responses. And I actually think both companies, I don't think they're disreputable. They're serious companies. You know, they're defending their commercial product as you would expect them to do. But they're obviously not going to be at the forefront of telling us about the risks any more than, you know, my beloved Colonel Sanders is going to be at the forefront of warning me the risks of diabetes, right? It's not his job, right?
There's a couple of other things worth considering in all of this as well. One of those you write about in this book, what are these drugs going to mean for people with eating disorders? Like, it's horrifying to think about.
The worst moment for me by far in the writing of the book was I've got a niece who's 19. One day we were FaceTiming, she was in a pub. It was a while into me taking the drugs, and she's like, oh, wow, I didn't know you had a neck, I didn't know you had a jaw, right? And then she looked down and she said, will you buy me some Ozempic? And I thought she was kidding and I laughed. She's a perfectly healthy weight. And then I realized she was being serious and I thought, have I counteracted all the messages I've been trying to give her since she was a little girl, right? The leading eating disorders experts are very worried. To be clear, my niece doesn't have an eating disorder, but going into the pandemic in Australia, in Britain, in most of the Western world, we had unprecedentedly high levels of eating disorders in teenage girls. Then we had lockdown and it went even higher. And now these drugs arrive. And anyone who knows anyone who's got an eating disorder knows they're in a constant battle. There's the psychological part of them that wants to starve themselves. And there's the biological part of them that wants to stay alive that forces them to sometimes eat. And what these drugs do, if you take them in high doses, is they just amputate your appetite, right? So they would empower that psychological part. They can really muffle those biological signals to eat. These drugs should only be given on prescription if you physically see the doctor in person, and that doctor should have some training in detecting eating disorders.
So where does it leave you, Johan, at the end of all of this? Like, you asked this question in the book, are the drugs a magic solution or a magic illusion? What do you think?
I've never had this experience with a book before. I know much more, but I don't know the answer to your question. And I'd like to think that isn't a failure on my part. It's just that it's literally impossible to know right now, right? And I end the book by going through like five scenarios for what might happen now. Most pessimistic scenario is that this is like there was a diet drug in the 90s called Fen-Phen, and it was marketed exactly the way that Ozempic is being marketed, literally the same words. 18 million prescriptions for Fen-Phen were written in the US in 1995. And then it was discovered it caused a horrific lung disorder. It obviously got pulled from the market. It led to the biggest payout in the entire history of the pharmaceutical industry, $12 billion. I don't think it's likely that's going to happen, but I can't totally rule it out. Then there's a sort of middle range scenario, which is that the drugs work, but only a tiny minority of people get to use them. Rich people, right? You know, the Real Housewives of New Jersey get to be super skinny, while the real school children of New Jersey get to, you know, get diabetes at the age of 12. The most optimistic scenario for me, the drugs work, they don't cause some horrific as yet unknown side effect, and that we get them to everyone who needs them. But crucially, they also wake us up to go, how the hell did we get to this situation? How did we get to the point half the population feel the need to drug themselves to eat less? More three-year-old children know what the McDonald's M means than know their own last name. We don't have to tolerate that. We don't have to tolerate our kids being poisoned and their appetites being hijacked and their bodies being altered and them being made sick, right? We can do what we did with smoking to get out of this stupid trap that we should never have got into in the first place?
Well, the book is fascinating. You won't be able to put it down. Johan Hari, author of Magic Pill, thank you very much for speaking with us on Hack.
Oh, you ask great questions. Thanks so much. And have an excellent beard. What more could I want from an interviewer? Thanks so much.
Thanks for the beard praise. Love it.
Hack on Triple J.
And Magic Pill, the extraordinary benefits and disturbing risks of new weight loss drugs from Johan Hari, is out this week. Just a reminder, if this has raised any issues for you, because we talked about a lot of stuff in there, if you need support for eating disorders, body image concerns, please call Butterfly's National Helpline on 1-800-ED-HOPE, 1-800-333-4673. There are chat options as well. Lifeline on 13 11 14. Got some messages through. Nina says, my diabetes has been uncontrolled since being unable to get a Zempic. It's quite distressing. I want to shift to that kind of focus now to Australia and where we're at. Dr. Catherine Williams is an obesity expert at the University of Sydney, and she's with us. Dr. Williams, thanks for coming on. We just heard from Johan Hari about the potential incredible impacts of drugs like Ozempic, also the risks. As an Australian medical expert, what's your take?
Yeah, I think these medications are game changers for some people. So I treat a lot of people with very severe obesity. So you think of the person 150, 250 kilos who's got strong genetic tendency to gain weight, and we're putting them in places like Western Sydney where there's all these fast food and, you know, you're in the car all the time and there's other stresses, and people tend to gain a lot of weight. So for people like that who are at real risk of medical problems, these drugs are amazing and we need them. I think, though, we can't be giving them to 30% of the population. And they tell us that, you know, 1 in 3 people have obesity. So we do also have to question how we can reduce rates of obesity.
So those kind of projections that maybe some around the world have had, that in the next 5 years, 1 in 4 people in the UK could be on weight loss drugs like this, you're saying it's probably not feasible.
I don't think so, and I hope that's not the case. I hope we actually start to look at the drivers for weight gain in our society, because there's a lot of them. Those are the things we probably need to target in a more aggressive fashion, but definitely the medications are needed in people who are having, you know, significant impact from their obesity.
Can you explain what the situation is in Australia at the moment? Like, is it easy to get hold of Ozempic for weight loss purposes?
No. So at the moment, to be clear, Ozempic is a drug for diabetes. There is another product which is 2.4 milligrams instead of 1 milligram, which is used specifically for weight reducing. It's the same drug, but it's actually going to be called Wegovy, and it's not actually physically available in Australia yet. So it's not surprising that people are using Ozempic for weight reduction, because obviously it does help to reduce weight, but it's not actually the drug that we're supposed to be talking about.
So how are people getting hold of it?
Yeah, so at the moment, you know, doctors will prescribe it. So I can prescribe it. That's considered off-label because it's indicated for diabetes. But in someone with medical problems, I think it's a reasonable thing to prescribe, but you do need to counsel the person about the risks and benefits of that. They can then take that to the chemist. Sometimes at the chemist, if there's restricted supply, which, you know, comes and goes, at the moment there is some supply of these drugs, but in the past there's been none. The person might be told, sorry, you don't have diabetes, you can't have that, or they might be put on a wait list, for example. There are, of course, some people that have been accessing it online. I believe, you know, the Australian government is trying to crack down on that a little bit, because it is an unregulated and potentially very unsafe way to get the medication.
I was going to ask about the shortages, because there have been impacts on people who need the drug for its other use, which, as you say, is treating diabetes.
It's terrible. I've had a lot of people who have very severe diabetes who've actually been able to come off their insulin, for example. They might have been on 4 injections a day, and then suddenly they can't get supply of their medication, and they can get quite sick quite quickly, and that can lead to a hospital admission even. That's put aside from the fact that the stress of not being able to sort of, you know, control your own diabetes management and trying to access your doctor in a panic and your doctor not having any answers for you. So the whole thing's been very stressful for patients, for clinicians, and potentially having quite severe impacts.
Johan Hari touched on this, but I imagine from a medical point of view, it would also be a bit of a concern to think about the impact it might have on those living with eating disorders.
I think that's right. I mean, I think anyone who's using these medications to reduce weight needs a proper discussion with a clinician who's used to working with people that have obesity, because certainly eating disorders can be part of that package. So it may be something like binge eating, or it may be other restrictive eating patterns, binge purging. So when you're prescribing these drugs, you don't just write a script. You actually are talking to the person about their health, you know, what's contributed to their weight gain, and also what their diet looks like at the moment. And you're managing all those things as part of the treatment paradigm. It's not just about the prescription of the drug. You know, if you do go on these medications without sort of addressing some of those other things, you can do harm.
We appreciate your take on all of this. Dr. Catherine Williams from the University of Sydney, appreciate you coming on Hack.
Thanks very much. Pleasure.
Hack on Triple J.
And a big response to this episode talking about Ozempic, someone saying, you know, I haven't been able to get access to Ozempic for my diabetes since people have started taking it for weight loss. Another person says, it's just a fad. As soon as you stop taking the drug, you're going to put all the weight back on. But then another person says, this has completely changed my relationship with food, and I'm so thankful that I found Ozempic. So look, there's definitely a lot of thoughts on this one. Not everyone agrees, but these drugs are changing the world in a lot of different ways. That is all we've got time for on this ep of the Hack Podcast. I'll be back tomorrow. I'll catch you then. See ya. Hack.